Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show. Andrew Colvett in for Charlie. He's on assignment at Cal State Fullerton for one more episode here. We welcome Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch. He's got a new bombshell outlining the CIA's involvement on J6. What the heck is the CIA, which is supposed to be operating on foreign targets and foreign adversaries, doing with fingers? What are they doing at J6? Why is that a thing? We also talk about his lawsuit against Fannie Willis and more. We then welcome Todd Bensman from the Center for Immigration Studies, and we talk about Haiti, barbecue, cannibalism. What are they going to do with this flotilla that's amassing in the Caribbean, headed for Florida? What's going to happen? Is it Texas 2.0? So much to discuss and unpack with Todd Bensman. You're not going to want to miss it. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at noblegoldinvestments.com. That is noblegoldinvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com.
We are joined by a great American and who runs one of the most important conservative groups in the country, Judicial Watch, Tom Fitton. Welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show, and thanks so much for making the time for us.
Hey, Andrew, thank you for having me. Great to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you. We've been working with your team to get you on with Charlie. I just so happened to get the honor of having you myself today while Charlie's out.
You're good enough.
That'll do, huh? You're not the backup. You're not the backup, Tom. Thank you. You guys are doing fantastic work. You have actually a number of different stories that I'd be interested in getting into with you. But the one that caught our eye just as of yesterday, actually, was this bombshell that the CIA now has its fingerprints on J6. I mean, it's a story with multiple layers, and the further we seem to peel it back, the more we discover. Tom, what have you and your great organization discovered about the CIA's involvement on J6?
You know, there's all sorts of weirdness with it, right? You know, these were text messages, not from the CIA, but these were ATF text messages that we have obtained after almost a year plus of waiting and suing. And they show that they had a CIA bomb text, down, looks like at the DNC and maybe where there were other pipe bombs, I guess at the RNC as well. And then there were dog teams on standby associated with the CIA. And so this is the first time I'm aware of, maybe others out there have heard of this before, but that the CIA was involved in response to the January 6th events. And it raises a series of questions. Why was the CIA involved? Typically, they don't get involved in domestic issues. Was there a foreign intelligence component that required their presence? Were they on standby before January 6th? Were they part of this spy operation against Americans that we knew was taking place by the deep state? And what else were they investigating related to January 6th? Was this the full extent of their involvement? And these are additional questions that need to be pursued. Obviously, they weren't. We didn't get much information on this, no information on this at all from the Pelosi January 6th committee. And frankly, the Republicans haven't done much on January 6th either.
Yeah, and Tom, I think you hit the nail on the head. My first thought when I saw this story was, what the heck is the CIA doing involved in J6? This is an intel agency that is supposed to be focusing on foreign adversaries. It's not supposed to have its purview in domestic affairs. It's more, you would think, the FBI, which we also know has a ton of fingerprints on J6. I mean, we have Representative Clay Higgins, who's been doing a lot of great work on this, Loudermilk, and others, where we're finding out that, yeah, maybe there was as many as 200 FBI agents involved, maybe more when you count informants. That Clay Higgins is also suggested that they were involved in group chats before J6, trying to potentially incite violence or other activity on that day that would have gone against the rule of law and peaceful assembly and all of those things. So, you know, when you look at this story in its totality, do you see an operation that was, let's just say, anti-Trump afoot? I mean, you know, I don't want to be conspiratorial. Was this just base incompetence with a bunch of agencies sort of not knowing what the left hand and the right hand were doing? Or do you see something coordinated, Tom? And I know I don't want you to get out over your skis, but it's not something a lot of other people haven't observed. What do you think?
Well, if you had said 2 days ago before this disclosure that the CIA was involved in the response to January 6th, you know, you would have been censored, right? And now it's confirmed through text messages that we had to uncover through a FOIA lawsuit. None of this was voluntary. So I think all sorts of other questions follow from that. What was their role generally? What was the role of other federal agencies? We knew, and we've known for some time, thanks in part to other FOIA requests we filed and lawsuits, that everyone who was anyone had a heads up that there was going to be a significant crowd that day. The security was poor. And the question is, why was it poor? Was it purposeful, incompetence? And I think it was a measure of both. I think the left and like the Pelosi gang and the DC government didn't want a big show of force because they thought it would be seen as political in the sense of helping Donald Trump. And, and frankly, I think they thought the left was going to beat up a bunch of Trumpers and they didn't want the cops to get in the way.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah. You think of Occam's razor, in a situation like this, the most obvious answer is usually the right answer. I think there's multiple factors playing into this that are all really fascinating. And then the whole pipe bomb thing. I mean, this is what your current investigation is looking into. Your FOIA requests have gotten to. It's who planted them? Why was there not more urgency? That the timeline doesn't make up. Darren Beatty's been fantastic on that story. We've had him on to discuss it. I think it's all really confusing. I think to know where the conspiracy begins and ends, and where incompetence begins and ends.
There's been zero official interest in any of these questions, all of which are legitimate questions. Because as you point out, there could be legitimate answers to all of it. I mean, I tend to think the pipe bomb scenario is just incompetence by security forces. The lack of response, we're presuming that the Secret Service and the U.S. Capitol Police, we're supposed to believe all their press releases about their competence and expertise and training. And, my experience is these agencies are as poorly run as every other federal program we're concerned about. But DOJ isn't going to tell us the truth. The Biden administration, they've got their whole theory of retaining power depends on a certain story and narrative about January 6th. And Congress is compromised because they're partly responsible for what happened. And then you've got the failure of leadership by the House Republicans to pursue January 6th once they got power in the House. And everything they're doing is a little bit too late.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you on that. And I'll never forget, Tom, Charlie tweeted out something. I mean, it must have been a year and a half ago, maybe even longer, basically on the fact that Congress or that Donald Trump had offered to approve 10,000 National Guard troops. And then that was fact checked on Instagram and on Facebook. I mean, all the fact checker orgs came after us. Everything was censored. And now we find out that that was actually true, that he did say, hey, if you want them, I'll approve them. You have to request them. And that request never came through. So the whole thing stinks to high heaven. And then you've got the J6 committee, which didn't disclose some of this evidence, including the piece about the 10,000 National Guard troops. And they've been hiding everything, destroying evidence. I don't think that this story gets nearly enough attention. And a lot of people say, we don't want to look backwards. We want to look forward, stop litigating the past. But this is so telling about the way Washington operates. And Tom, you know this better than just about anybody, of just how corrupt and how incompetent. You're absolutely right. It's a combination of two.
Yeah, we're not supposed to look backwards, but they want to put dozens, hundreds, thousands of people in jail over it. They're trying to jail Trump over it. So they just don't want us to look behind their theory of the case, their theory of January 6th. And it was a complicated day. They say it was the most significant event since 9/11. Yet, if 9/11 was investigated this way, we'd still have the airlines shut down.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. It's been a total farce, and I wish we had a more rigorous pursuit of the truth here. And thankfully, there's organizations like yours that are doing the actual work of getting the information and the truth out. These FOIA requests are a big part of that.
Hey, everybody. There is an eagerly awaited release of Cabrini in theaters on March 8th, International Women's Day. It's an amazing film. I saw it the other day. It is incredible. It's like The Godfather, but better. From Angel Studios and Alejandro Monteverde, award-winning director of Sound of Freedom, comes the powerful true story of Francesca Cabrini, an Italian immigrant who arrives in New York City in 1889 and is greeted by disease, crime, and impoverished children. Cabrini is not merely a movie, it is a tribute to the spirit of women everywhere. It tells the story of a trailblazer, a visionary whose tireless dedication to serving others transcend boundaries and inspire generations. On this International Women's Day, we can honor Cabrini's enduring legacy by celebrating the countless contributions of women throughout history. Mark your calendars for March 8th and join me in theaters to experience the extraordinary journey of Mother Cabrini, a celebration of courage, compassion, and the triumph of the human spirit.
Tom, it's kind of related to what we were just talking about, January 6th committee. You're suing Fannie Willis for communications with special counsel Jack Smith and the January 6th committee. What is going on here? Because this is something we've been hot on this show. The coordination, the collusion, how connected are these various lawfare attempts against Trump?
Well, you know, we had asked for these documents, you know, relatively simple request, because I know, as you're saying, everyone's interested in it. What have they been doing with Jack Smith or the Pelosi January 6th committee? Was that all part of a conspiracy or collusion or, you know, just what was being done here? And they told us they didn't have any documents. So we asked Fannie Willis's office for this. They said, we don't have anything. We look, we don't have anything. And then Congress just not too long ago released a letter that Fannie had signed to Betty Thompson, who ran the January 6th committee for Pelosi. So how does that comport with them telling us they had no documents? Were they hiding documents? Did they miss this in the files? I doubt it. And so now we're in federal court. We sued Fannie Willis, not in federal court, but in state court. We sued Fannie Willis. We sued Fulton County. And we want the documents. What communications did they have with the politicized January 6th committee and the politicized Jack Smith investigation?
Yeah, no, I think I'm going to play a clip here, and apologies, it's going to suck up a little of our time here. But 112, this is Newt Gingrich on this show saying that he was getting word from D.C. that there was collusion going on with Fannie Willis in the White House counsel's office. Go ahead and play cut 112.
That I am told, this is hearsay, but I am told by a reliable source that Friday evening, somebody from Washington called the district attorney in Atlanta and said, you have to indict on Monday. We have to cover up all of the mistakes we just made with Weiss. And she said, apparently, my jurors aren't coming back till Tuesday. And they said, you didn't hear me. You have to indict on Monday. And she said, well, they're not going to get here before noon. They said, it doesn't matter. She said, this means it's going to be 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock at night. They said, it doesn't matter. We need the news media shifting.
Who made that phone call?
We don't know. And I'm telling you up front, this is hearsay, but it's from a person who has remarkably good sources.
I totally believe it, though, because that would explain why they leaked and they messed up on the clerk document, why she was exhausted, and why they had the 11 p.m. press conference, Mr. Speaker.
All right, Tom Fitton, you hear what Newt is saying there. It sort of ties into what you're talking about, not only with the J6 committee, not only with this whole weaponized DOJ, the collusion, but also the special counsel. You heard that they screwed up with the special counsel. You're now suing for the transcripts of those interviews with Robert Hur, am I correct? So you got like your hand in multiple pieces of this, Tom.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're investigating everything, I half jokingly say. Of course, they released a transcript since we sued. Yep. I'm going to take a little bit of credit for it. We will.
Yeah, you should.
But, you know, is there a video, an audio of the video of what happened? I think that would be very educational to see Biden's demeanor and how he answered these questions live, because the transcript doesn't, it gives you a good part of the story, but not the entire story, which is why he was recorded. At least it's been reported. So what would be the reason for not giving us the video or audio? I'm not sure. But we're going to fight it out in federal court.
Yeah, good for you. But you heard what Newt said there. Speaker Gingrich said they screwed up on the special counsel appointment. And I maybe it was a simple political PR miscalculation that they were reacting to, and they wanted to switch the momentum back and get back on the offense. What do you suppose that there was collusion, that this hearsay Newt was hearing about? Are you seeing evidence as you're digging into these? I mean, this is obviously why you're pursuing Fannie Willis. You saw Nathan Wade actually had taken trips to Billing for communication with the White House. What do you suspect we're going to find as you look under all these rocks, Tom?
I think Newt's onto something there, and there are always many reasons why something is done, including the abuse of Trump. Obviously, Trump is a threat. They need to abuse him, keep his supporters in line by making them nervous that they'll get prosecuted too. But also the abuses of Trump by the Justice Department and these other allies, like in New York and Fulton County, serve to distract and protect and keep the DOJ busy and the public distracted from the criminality of folks like Joe Biden. In 2016, it was Hillary Clinton. In 2020, right, it was the Obama gang with the spying on Trump that was disclosed. Right. So by targeting Trump, they're targeting their political opponent and at the same time protecting their own.
Tom Fitton, Judicial Watch, I thank you, sir, for all your great work. Thank you for making the time.
Okay, Kirk fans, I need you to stop and pay attention to this. If you deal with exhaustion, brain fog, mood swings, or food cravings, if you're constantly getting sick or simply lack the zeal you used to have in life, then I have some news for you. While back, I found a liquid supplement called Strong Cell, and it changed my health in a very profound way. I take it every single day. Look, I knew I had to partner with them. I did the research, Google, and look up online what happens when you mix NADH with CoQ10. And marine collagen. It's simple. Every area of your body has cells. So if your cells are healthier, then you will also be healthier. You don't have to take my word for it. Listen to one of these testimonials. After taking Strong Cell for 6 weeks, I found improvement in many areas, less shoulder pain, improved mental clarity, increased natural energy, and so much more. I'm thankful that Charlie Kirk recommended this to his listeners. Rebecca says, I absolutely love Strong Cell. At first, I didn't think it would make much of a difference for my chronic fatigue, depression, and anxiety, but I thought I'd give it a chance. I've tried to find depression meds for 10 years, and since you used Strong Cell, I'm feeling better than I ever have on depression medication. Customer for life. Thank you, Charlie Kirk, for recommending this product. So there it is. You've heard from me directly and some of the users who have seen their lives changed by Strong Cell. I personally recommend taking it every day for at least 30 days. I take it every day before I go on the air, and it's helped me in more ways than I can even name. Each of our bodies is very different, so I would recommend you give the supplement at least 2 to 3 months to see the changes in your body. Go to strongcell.com and learn more for yourself. That's strongcell.com/Charlie. And don't forget to use discount code Charlie at checkout to get your special 20% discount for Kirk listeners. Or you can call 888-596-0155 to order over the phone. That is 888-596-0155. Or visit strongcell.com/Charlie.
All right, Todd Bensman, thank you for joining the show. There is so much to discuss here with Haiti. Haiti, by the way, Charlie tweeted something out about, you know, the Haitian invasion. There was a briefing before Congress, and the clip is like at 3 million views. This is a story that fascinates people for a lot of different reasons, mainly because Haiti's kind of a mystery, I think, to Americans. We just know it's messed up. We know the Clintons have a hand in it, or at least in its history. Why don't we start there? And you have a great new piece about how we're at the precipice of a massive new refugee crisis with Haiti. But can you just tell us about the state of Haiti? Why is it messed up? What's going on there? Why do we need to be concerned?
Well, the current failure of Haiti really begins in September 2021 when we had the Haitian migrant camp crisis in Del Rio, Texas. I think a lot of people remember that, 17,000 under the bridge there in Texas. The way that they liquidated that camp was the Biden administration reached out and killed, I mean, a stake through the heart of imminent democratic elections for Haiti in order to install a dictator who would accept deportations from that migrant camp. So there were all these plans in place. They were 2 months away from elections, and the Biden administration shut them down so that they could get somebody who would take deportations from Texas. They did the deportations from Texas and left that guy in there. And that is the guy who is now, they never got their elections. They never had their democracy. And now we have gangs running sections of every part of the country. It's total anarchy. It fits the definition of a failed state. No airport service, no seaport service, starvation spreading around the country. They can't get anything in there. The result of that is sailboats filled with Haitians that are trying to get to the Florida Keys. Right now, they are en route. These ships are sailing, headed for the area of southern Florida, where the Keys, right out of Miami there. The Border Patrol station there, through leaked documents, is warning that if any of these boats show up, they will be immediately overwhelmed and swamped. They have like 10 people there to deal with this. And the piece that I have up right now is just pointing out that how Joe Biden handles the ships that are showing up, that are on their way, will determine whether we have a mass seaborne migration crisis to contend with in the next few weeks.
Yeah, so your piece says what Biden does next will determine whether a mass seaborne migration crisis develops with Haitians. Now, you've got people like Matt Gaetz saying, you know, we cannot turn southern Florida into little Haiti. I mean, obviously, everything that's gone on in the last few months and the last 3 years with Biden's open border immigration crisis, this just feels like, you know, it feels a little bit, Todd, to me, like Texas 2.0, where you had the standoff with the federal government, because you're saying that you have well-placed sources within Customs and Border Patrol that are saying that we're going to assist these boats to arrive safely as opposed to turning them away. Then you had Governor DeSantis saying, you know, absolutely not. So you've got another red state governor pitted against the federal government. And so it's almost like and by the way, I mean, that is instructive, because Governor Abbott stood his ground, and we're sort of at this detente right now, and the Texas law enforcement is still putting up razor wire. They're still enforcing the border and pushing migrants to the west, but that's still, there's still legal challenges that are pending, right? How do you see this playing out? And one other question, as far as that federal state conflict that is building up here, how do you see that playing out? And secondly, there, as we were researching this, getting ready for you to come on, we couldn't necessarily determine whether there was an actual flotilla that had already amassed, you know, in the Caribbean. You're saying that you know that it has, or are you, I mean, do we have solid proof that this is actually happening?
Yes, we do. There are there's good reporting in the Bahama press in the Bahamas about apprehensions of these sailing vessels moving through Bahama waters. So they are catching some of these ships coming through, but others have gotten through and are on the way here. The big question is whether the administration is going to let them land in Florida. If they let them make it all the way to Florida, if they just escort them to the banks of Florida, to the beaches of Florida, then the message that will go back to Haiti is, it's open. They're letting us in. They're not stopping us at sea. And then you should be seeing many more ships heading toward Florida because they're letting us in. And that's what he did at the southern border. That's exactly the same. That is the southern border model. When you show up and you get in, we let you in. We don't block, stop, and deter you. Then millions more will come. And that's what's at stake here. Now, in the administration's defense, this is a tough situation because if they block them at sea, they won't be able to readily return them to Haiti because the ports are closed and controlled by gangs, and so is the airport. So the question is, what do you do with them? Well, right now, what I'm being told is they're going to just let them land in Florida and then process them in. That's exactly the ingredient for mass migration. But there are other alternatives. There's Guantanamo Bay in Cuba.
I was about to ask you about that, Todd. I'm seeing reports that actually Biden is considering Guantanamo Bay as a processing center. Since that is American controlled, there's got to be legal technicalities here. You know, is it American soil? Is it not? Does it give them essentially entryway into the state? Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's been done before. In 1991, George H. Bush put the kibosh on one of these Haitian boat crises when he had the Navy divert them to Guantanamo Bay. Well, nobody is going for the great Guantanamo Bay dream. Nobody wants to end up in Guantanamo Bay. They want to get into the States. So it's really the perfect solution. And it's been done before. It doesn't mean you can have U.S. asylum. It's a base in Cuba
that
the U.S. controls. And when the time comes, they can be repatriated back to Haiti and they don't step foot on U.S. soil and claim asylum. So that is, to me, the obvious solution here. A second one is what Bill Clinton did when this happened in 94, 95, which was to organize a multilateral invasion of Haiti, put U.S. Marines in there to stabilize things. And then they returned the shiploads of Haitians back to a more stable Haiti. I'm not hearing anything about a multinational force going into Haiti right now, although I think it's necessary. Ultimately, we're going to be forced into doing something like that, or people are going to start starving. So that's kind of what's at stake. This is a very interesting situation to watch on multiple fronts. Ron DeSantis is playing Greg Abbott over there, like you mentioned. He's surged 250 law enforcement officers and vessels and boats out there. I don't know what he's going to do with those. If some of those sailboats get close to the shoreline, I don't know what there are legal questions about what DeSantis can do at that point. Can he take custody? So there's state federal issues developing in Florida. If this happens, it has to happen first. But we know that they are on the way. They're getting caught in the Bahamas. And by the way, one thing about the Bahamas, they don't want to get stuck with thousands of Haitians either. So at some point, they're going to say, just let them pass. We're not pulling them over. We're not going to end up stuck with the hot potato if they want to go to Florida. So watch for how the Cubans and the Bahamans, I don't know how to say that, Bahamians, I'm sure somebody can correct me on that, how they react as more and more sailboats start coming. Now, they're sailboats because they can't get fuel right now. So they're sailing and they're slow. So the first ones I'm told are about 48 hours out from Florida at this point. And we'll see if the Coast Guard interdicts them or lets them come in. That's the thing to watch.
Wow. So that's news, 48 hours away from the Florida coast. And let's just be clear, Todd, and I think this is the bottom line here. If you let them land in America, that is letting them stay. And you said 250 boats that DeSantis has. He needs 2,500
250 police and National Guard he's deployed so far, just a day or two ago. Sphincters are tightened all over Florida in Homeland Security circles. I can tell you that. They are surging more Border Patrol agents there. They're getting ready for a problem.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. As you know, Mike Lindell has a passion to help you get the best sleep of your life. After he invented the world's best pillow, he created the famous Giza Dream Sheets. They are the best sheets you'll ever sleep on. The best night's sleep just got even better. For a limited time, you'll get a queen-size set of $59.98, king-size for just $69.98, the lowest prices in history. Mike and the MyPillow employees continue to be canceled by big box stores and attacked by the media. They appreciate all of your great support during these times. I want to thank you by giving you the best specials on all their MyPillow products. To get the best specials ever, go to MyPillow.com or call 800-875-0425. Use promo code Kirk. You get the famous Giza Dream Sheets, queen size for just $59.98 and king size for just $69.98. You also get 60% off the original My Slippers. So call 800-875-0425 or go to MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk.
Todd, you know this stuff better than anybody. Have we, in recent memory, you mentioned Clinton, you mentioned some other iterations of this. Is the main concern going to be that basically Joe Biden just lacks the will to essentially turn these people away, as we've seen other administrations do, and then once they get here, you know, it creates this magnet effect? Or there's just so many open questions because we haven't seen this dynamic of the federal government being so lax on illegal immigration. Is that the main concern, that Joe Biden's going to refuse to push these people away and is going to invite them in?
Yes. The island of Haiti, the population is 11 million. Nobody wants to live in their home country. So the question is, do you aid and abet a population transfer in the millions by boat to Florida? Or do you, enact policies that stem the flow? Well, all past presidents that have been faced with similar circumstances have done whatever they could, whatever they had to make sure that a population transfer didn't happen. This president is very different. This is the first president ever in the history of the country, as far as I know, who has purposefully and intentionally opened the southern border to 10 million people crossing in 36 months. They are allowing more than 85%, I would bet closer to 100% of everybody who reaches the border in one way or another to enter. So the question is, are they going to do that at the on the Atlantic seaboard off the coast of Florida? It remains to be seen. I suspect that the president is very worried about the polling in an election year. We saw the president go to the border for the first time, or maybe the second time.
Well, Brownsville. Yeah.
Brownsville, he stayed in a hermetically sealed office or whatever, but he was there. If he had dropped a pin on his phone, he could claim I was there. I went to the border.
Right.
But that shows that he is concerned about the political optics of mass migration. So the big question here is, if he lets those first boats land, then the boats that would come behind it will then set sail, right? I mean, that's how it works. That's how the southern border worked. He let the first waves in after Inauguration Day, and they sent selfies home. And, so I'm here. Here I am in America. And then it was on. It's been on for 3 years straight.
You're correct. So, Todd, I have a question for you, actually. Just pure numbers. How do we have it? You said 11 million Haitians. Obviously, hopefully we're not going to get 11 million Haitians in Florida. Two questions. How many are we talking? What are the estimates of how many are going to try and come, and how many have already embarked on that journey? And secondly, is there any animus politically pointed at Florida being this sort of MAGA hotbed, this MAGA center of antagonist to the Biden regime? Where are you hearing any of that, where, there's just an unwillingness conveniently politically to work with DeSantis and his government?
Oh, I'm sure. No, I'm not hearing any outward messaging about that. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if inwardly they're kind of like, pleased with at least the idea of letting, you know, tens of thousands of Haitians land in Florida and, you know, and putting, I mean, there's already hundreds of thousands of Haitians living in Florida who came in over the southern border, collapsing their hospitals and doing, you know, and really, you know, on public welfare systems, et cetera. I don't know how many we can look, we can expect, but certainly if the thing were to just open up tens of thousands, I mean, in 91, George H. Bush set up Guantanamo Bay and they had like 40,000 in there, in the camp. That was in 91. Most of them, you know, moving by ship or in boats, just like they would today. Certainly tens of thousands. And if they really just opened the gate and just said, we're going to send our Coast Guard to escort these ships, lest anybody drown, we'll save anybody from drowning. We'll provide anti-drowning security all the way to the Florida Keys. You know, why wouldn't you set sail? Why wouldn't you? Of course.
Yeah. Todd, this is really important. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. DeSantis v. Biden will be very interesting. Thank you, Todd, for your time. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you get anything out of this show, if it's important to you, if you find it a place of refuge, of information, if you find it a sea of calm and order in an otherwise chaotic world, please consider joining members.charliekirk.com. That's members.charliekirk.com. We're even doing a weekly members-only call. It is a really important new tool that we are currently adding to every day. You also get a weekly column. You get exclusive content and video that Charlie releases just there. So be a part of the inside exclusive community at members.charliekirk.com. It would be our pleasure to welcome you. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.